the Lincoln-Douglas debates, Kennedy versus Nixon, Clive Palmer versus Western Australia. Just some of the greatest minds going head to head in heated debates. However, none of these debates were fought with as much ferocity and passion as me at any bonfire on any weekend in 2001, arguing with people about which album was better, Tool's Lateralis or System of a Down's Toxicity. And I was at bonfires having these heated debates, no pun intended, because I'm a country boy. I'm a regional man. I'm in touch with the land. I'm true blue. Or so I thought. Right up until I saw Australian comedian Nick Capper. He is true country. I mean, I've never even seen Thirsty Merc at a BNS ball. So yeah, I do have to admit it. I'm a fraud. I grew up in a city of 100,000 people. We had a 24-hour KFC on the weekends. I mean, you could go there at 7 p.m. and get a feed with your family and then go back there at 4 a.m. and get verbally abused by a drunk stranger who would threaten to cave your head in just for looking at their girlfriend. But my guest today, Nick Capper, he is a real country boy and a great comedian.
And this was his heckle. He goes, well, if the John Deere doesn't have a handbrake, how are you going to do a handbrake turn? And I said, mate, the top speed of a tractor is 38 kilometres an hour. Good luck doing a handbrake turn at that speed. So if you want to heckle tonight, it's your funeral.
So Nick, you grew up in a town called Gundawindi and has a population of around 7,000. And I'm going to guess you had many musical arguments around bonfires too. But how many of your weekends per year do you think you spent arguing about whether Ween was better than Primus?
Well, mate, that's a long story, that is. I actually discovered Ween a lot later on. I was at a party and a friend put on Mr. Bungle. And I said, oh, I like these guys. And then he said, I'll give you a CD of stuff. And there was a bunch of Mr. Bungle on there and then a bunch of Ween on there. And I got really into Ween, but that was when I was about 20. I'd say my new metal journey began when I went to boarding school. I was in year 8, I guess, so around 13. And I bought Silverchair Frog Stomp and 100% Hits, volume 12, I think it was. And I liked pop. You know, I was listening to Peter Andre, Mysterious Girl.
You had washboard abs.
Yeah. It was great, man. It was sexy. It was a real good time in music then. Herbie, remember that guy, Herbie? I'm in the right kind of mood. You know, yeah. That kind of.
It's my back tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah, I was into that. And then I got Silverchair Frog Stomp and I was like, this rules. But then I overheard Nirvana and everyone talked about Nirvana. Everyone was into Nirvana. And that's when I purchased the ultimate, I would say the golden key into any alternative music in that era. That was Nirvana, Nevermind. Such a ball terror. But I guess I always had a thirst for the mysterious, I guess, the dark arts, all that kind of stuff. And I saw the older kids walking around with Metallica shirts. That's got to be the wildest stuff. You know when you get that?
Yeah, they're scary. They're intimidating.
It was scary, man. It was scary as hell. I remember my friend, I think my brother had Hip Machine 10 or something like that. And at the back of those albums, they'd put a couple of metal tracks or something. And I remember I'm Broken by Pantera was on. And I was like, this is the wildest, scariest stuff I've ever heard in my whole life. So, yeah, went from there to Roots by Sepultura.
Nice.
Yeah, man. So I went in there hardcore, and then I was heavily into that metal thing, and then I was, as you probably know, I'm into motorbikes. I love riding motocross, freestyles, and Crusty Demons, all that kind of stuff introduced, you know, like Static X.
Yes, Wisconsin Death Trip, an all-timer.
There was a song called Get Loose by Primer 55. I don't think they had any other songs. Yeah, and then I kind of went from there to going through all of those, because you would listen to, I think all through high school, all those bands would hang out. So you had Sepultura, Roots, and then I remember someone playing Korn one time, and I'm like, what is this? This is the wildest. I think it was Twist. I think I just heard Twist straight up, which was scary as hell. And then I got really into, huge into Korn, huge. like loved it, really, really loved Korn. Didn't really get into Limp Bizkit. I tried it.
Absolute coward.
I know.
No, I reckon you're just like a tiny bit too old. Like even just 8 months too old, you realize like, no, this is not for me. But I was peak demographic. Like the record label saw me through a sniper scope and just like, we're taking all his money. But when we did an episode on Sepultura's Roots, we realized that Max's son was really, really into Korn's first album. And so much so that they had a CD player in each room, and on each CD player was Korn just playing. And so Max got Jonathan Davis and Mike Patton and stuff on Sepultura Roots.
Max Cavalera's son was heavily into Korn.
Yeah, and so a lot of people said that Max stole Korn's guitar sound because they got Ross Robinson to do that album. And so a lot of people were like, you stole their sound. And that's why people are calling it like Sepultura's new metal album.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh, man, because I thought they wouldn't have even – I thought Korn wouldn't have even been popular then. You know, I mean, the first album was popular, but I never thought it would have crept into their kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, well, what, Roots was 96. I think Korn's first album was 94, but they already had a bit of buzz around LA, so people knew of them.
Man, the amount of, like, cool shit that you find out, like, yeah, when I wasn't into Faith No More then, you know, my palate wasn't refined enough, I guess. But to find out that Mike Patton was on Look Away, that he did the guests.
Yeah.
The guest vocals was so cool. It really blew me away, you know?
To be fair, though, he doesn't do much. He's sort of buried in there. You know, he doesn't have the big chorus, you know? But then, like, Soulfly went on to do songs with Grady from Wilhaven, Chino from Deftones. You know, Soulfly's album had Fred Durst and Chino. So who's who?
Yeah, man. Yeah. What was that? That was a great song. Head Up.
Head up. Yeah. Yeah.
With Chino Marino and Max Cavalera are fantastic. There was a great song that Deftones did on the Crow 2 soundtrack.
You're going deep.
Yeah, that was really good, but it wasn't on any of the albums.
I'm going to have to check it out. I didn't even know there was a Crow 2.
Yeah, man. Not a very good movie. I think Iggy Pop's in it.
Well, I've based my entire personality on the Crow 1, so maybe I can evolve to the next level, you know? I'm going to move on to the Dark Knight.
Yeah, some real incel vibes there, some early incel vibes. Yeah, it was cool, man. I got fully into the corner. I remember I had the Adidas tracksuit pants. I had the Korn Adidas tracksuit top. Wore them around. Looked like the biggest tool ever. And then I remember a few mind-blowing albums. There was Rage Against the Machine self-titled album. I remember first hearing that and then really blowing my mind, just playing it nonstop on rotation, like every track, amazing. That really turned me into, I guess, a Rage Against the Machine head. And I slowly went off Korn at that point because I hated how a lot of those bands, they would start off really hard, really crazy, and then it would slow down into, oh, my dad touched me, whatever, you know. You just wanted it to be like, oh, I wanted it to be crazy all the way through.
Yeah, everything all the time, just in my face, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need a bagpipes break.
Yeah, that's it. I had a friend called Pete Lyon. I still hang out with him sometimes. And we went to an agricultural school, so there wasn't many people into metal. But him and I would go, you know, on Saturday at boarding school, you get day leave. So there was three CD shops. There was one CD shop in the arcade. There was a Sanity on the other side of Tamworth, a Sanity that sometimes had some little gems in there. And then there was this place called the Mud Box. The Mud Box. It was run by these two really big goth girls. I wish I could catch up with them and just say, hey, thank you. Thank you for showing me great music. And we had to wear these uniforms, you know, we had to wear, even when we're on day leave, we had to wear a tie and stuff on a Saturday, and we were the laughing stock of anyone alternative, anyone skate, any basically the whole town.
And it's what I think of though. When I think of agriculture, I think of suit and ties though, so it's fair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we wore moleskins.
Hey.
As our trousers, which is crazy. And I remember one time I went into the mud box and I picked up Fear Factory, D-Manufacture. I said, oh, can I listen to this? And my mates and I were standing there, and the lady cranked it up, the first track, just like that electric drum kit, like that. Yeah, it was mind-blowing. I'm like, I got to buy this. Here and now, and it was so good. It was the best, man.
Yeah, because Fear Factory doesn't let up at all.
No, man, no. It still stays. I don't really listen to Korn anymore. During lockdown, I was pretty depressed, and I put on Life is Peachy and drew some pictures, and it wasn't bad. There's some real genius in Korn that I like, but it just wasn't. Yeah, I was riding motorbikes and stuff at the time, and I was kind of looking for soundtracks, I guess. If I ever made a motorbike video, what would be the hardest thing? You know, Korn just didn't cut it. You know, you'd have to cut all the emotional bits out, you know. But, yeah, it was cool. And then I had some, I can't remember what stinkers, what albums I bought in that time, because you're always looking for a rap metal. You were kind of, no matter what it boiled down to, you're always looking for Rage Against the Machine. That's what you were looking for in a way.
You got stung by Head PE. You know, you might get stung by Godsmack.
Yes. We got into Cold Chamber for a bit. I wasn't really into Cold Chamber, but then they really grew me, and I really loved that first album. I thought it was great, you know. Loco was really good.
Big Truck, where he just points out big trucks. Incredible.
Yeah. That was really good. And I loved that they, I guess back in that time, if you had all those piercings and different colored hair, it was wild, but you were basically setting yourself up to have no job. Like, anyone can get a job now. So those guys were really brave, like really brave. I remember seeing the film clip to Barbie Girl, and the girl had a big tattoo on her arm. And that's the first thing I thought of, was like, how's she going to get a job? Like, she must have plunged herself into music. It was wild to be new metal.
I actually, to name drop a little bit, I have a friend who's friends with Aqua. And allegedly, all of them did really well with their money, invested in a lot of stuff, except one of the members. And one of the members is desperate for them to like tour, like all the time. Just like, can we just get back on the road? I need some money. And they're like, you should have bought a bar like the rest of us.
Really?
I'm going to put a blanket alleged over all of that. I don't want to be sued by Aqua, but yeah. So I think they did okay. It's like, you know, you make a bunch of money. If you invest it right, you should be okay for a long time. Tattoo or no tattoo. But you mentioned Limp Bizkit. Did you ever see their Woodstock 99 set?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I my friend had the album. I can't remember where I read. There's a great quote that always stays in my head, and that was Trent Reznor. He said when Rage Against the Machine got on the stage, it was like seeing the second coming. Like, apparently they got on the stage, played Bulls on Parade, and it was like seeing like a prophecy or something, like seeing like the four horsemen of the apocalypse or something like that, you know. Like, I remember him saying a quote like that, you know, and it was awesome.
And I think Fred Durst at that show, he like surfed the crowd on a piece of like balsa wood essentially. And Trent Reznor said, you know, Fred Durst can surf that piece of wood right up my ass. And Fred Durst was like, I don't give a shit what you say. And then wrote a song on Chocolate Starfish about Trent Reznor where they just stole their chorus.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah. What a terrible album that was. That was awful. God, I had it.
But did you know Limp Bizkit actually covered a Ministry song at the Woodstock 99 concert?
Really?
Yeah, they covered Thieves.
Really?
They later released it in like 2013 on an album, but yeah, they were covering it like back in 97. So you like Ministry, you're wearing the Filth Pig shirt. Fred Durst likes Ministry. If you ever meet him, you got something to talk about now.
Man, I think this is what this is what brings me back to music and comedy and culture and stuff, is no matter how big, like, sure, more people have heard of Limp Bizkit than Ministry, but you'll see that the Kings, the people that really, really went out there, really took a big risk, really went wild with it, will always have more respect. I bet it lives in Fred Durst's head that he'll never be as cool as Al Jorgensen, you know.
As he's sitting around his massive mansion, I'm sure it's a big concern for him. But you want that cred, and you can't really buy that. That punk
rock
cred.
Man. Yeah, you get it in comedy. You know, you're like, you'll see a guy like, you know, like he's a nice guy. I've never really met him, but you see, I shouldn't point out, but famous comedians, and they're famous, but they're trying to chase what some other people have, like that crazy darkness, that risk. They try to emulate it, but you know it doesn't stick with them, so they're just stuck in a hard place. You almost feel sorry for them.
I'm fascinated by that, because it's like there's an X factor, and I see it in bands a lot. It's like, I believe 99% of what you're doing, but there's this 1% where I'm like, I think this is disingenuous, and I can't pinpoint it, I can't articulate it, but I don't think that's true to your character, and I feel like you're trying to be something you're not, and it's not quite landing. Meanwhile, you know, the people who are, just like Jorgensen's a great example. He is who he is for all his faults and stuff, but you know, that's who he is. He's not pretending to be something else. Like, he's living that lifestyle. He is that 24/7, and you can't emulate that sincerely.
Exactly. Exactly, man. And you know, those people have it in spades. And, you know, you've got comedians like Greg Larson. I never see him at an open mic. He's just so natural. He's such a natural comic, and just knows what's going on. He doesn't need to practice. He's just funny. He's just having fun. You know, he's obviously got a lot of demons as well, but it all works for him, you know. And no matter how big I get or whatever, there'll be guys like him or other people where I'm like, well, I'll never be as funny as that. But I won't be as natural. You just got to lay down and take it.
Well, after this podcast goes out, man, don't worry. Greg Larson will be crawling up to you being like, bro, how did you do it? You know, this is the pinnacle.
How'd you get on Basio death trip, you know?
Well, actually, so I've seen you a bunch of times live. I was at Pork Palace. I was there for the filming. I have taken some liberties here, man. And I thought, look, I feel like, great comedian, you're doing some great shows, great podcasts. We'll do the plugs later. But I don't know much about comedy, but I feel like you need to transcend into other scenes. And I think your comedic stylings in a nightclub situation, as a club banger, skits mix sort of style, would go really, really well. So if it's all right with you, I've actually made a little song, a little remix of Pork Palace that you're more than welcome to have.
Okay, great.
Pork Palace, hand me my chalice, cause shit goes crazy when I get to Pork Palace. Pork Palace, 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 cause shit goes crazy when I get to Pork Palace. Pork Palace, hand me my chalice, cause shit goes crazy when I get to Pork Palace. Pork Palace.
So next time you're at a Newcastle club at 2 a.m. and they ask you to get up, just plug your phone in and play that. I guarantee you will cross over. That's the next level, John Edwards style.
Man, that is incredible. I love that. Thank you so much. I'm blown away. And it's funny you say skits mix, because when I was in year 12, I think, we went on an art trip to Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And my mate, Pete Lyon, once again, his brothers had lived in Sydney. And we were at, I think we were at Wynyard Station or something like that. And we heard about the two fabled CD shops, like the Kings. Of metal. And that was, of course, there was this one called Fish Records, this big Fish Records. And then there was the other one, the, what is it? It's still there. I went there last time I was in Sydney.
Is it Utopia Records?
Utopia, that's it, Utopia. And it was Utopia, like it was crazy. And my my friend Pete said, I think we can get the train. We don't have enough time to walk there, but we can get the train. We got the train to Town Hall, and I went into Fish Records, and I listened to Skits Mix, and it was the wildest thing I'd heard in my whole life. Like, just blew my mind. Like, what is this? And I bought it, not knowing anything about techno, nothing. Walked out, and Fear Factory were playing at the Metro, and we couldn't go in. You know, we were on excursion, but we saw this dude selling T-shirts, demanufactured T-shirts.
Yeah.
And this bloke, this metal guy, walks up to him and goes, "Oi, what are you selling these T-shirts for? There's no money going to the band. These are crap." And he's like, "Dodgy metal. Dodgy metal." And everyone started chanting like, "Dodgy metal, dodgy metal." And then the bloke's like, I'll just sell them for $5 then, or whatever, $5 or $10. So Pete and I bought a shirt, and it was the coolest thing we'd ever seen, like a full on chant. But then we realized it was probably a grift.
Oh, you reckon he was a plant?
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, it was sick, man. I was like, welcome to Sydney. Welcome to the big city. This rules. I can't believe this.
I got Skits Mix in my pocket. I got a misshapen demanufactured shirt where they've misspelled Fear Factory. Hell yeah. Big city living.
It was so good, man. Yeah, so that was it. It was the best time in music ever. I remember when I left year 12, somehow I'd gotten into, don't ask me how I got into them, but I got into Stone Temple Pilots, Tiny Music. One of the greatest albums ever, and really got into that. I was drawing heaps of tattoos and stuff, not to put on people or whatever, but really influenced by all that kind of stuff, riding dirt bikes, and it was a great time to be into all of that stuff, you know?
I've seen you on stage and you wear like Faith No More shirts and you wear Mr. Bungle shirts. I know you're into Queens of the Stone Age, but when I was like, hey, do you want to come on the podcast? And you said, I've been waiting my whole life for this opportunity. Thank you so much. Why did you pick Filth Pig?
This is where I went off the rails. Terrible.
You've pinpointed where it all went wrong.
That was when you first started burning CDs, you know? So we'd try and find all the songs that were on motorbike videos, tracks. And I remember my mate Adam Woods, he burnt me this awesome mix of all the Static X songs were all on motorbike films. Power Man 5000, White Zombie, Rob Zombie. All of that stuff. And it all kind of, it was all different, but it all kind of sounded the same in a weird way. It was always like, it was all kind of like a regurgitation of sounds. And I remember watching this skateboard video, The End. I think it was the most expensive skateboard film ever made at that time. And I remember hearing Super Beast by Rob Zombie and this guy just like ollieing over these steps. And it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my whole life. Like, because it kind of sounded weird and poppy, but also, you know, metal.
Yeah, there's some energy there as well. And it's like a 4-4 just solid beat, but just like noise going over the top of it. And man, ever since, I reckon you and I just been trying to chase that dragon. Like, you know, it's like, oh, have you heard about this bar? You can throw axes there. It's like, yeah, but it's never going to like replicate me finding a Sunk Lotto poster in Juice magazine while fucking Hellbilly Deluxe is blasting in my headphones.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. Like, stuff like that is, I'll always remember hearing that the start of Demanufacture in the Mudbox, you know, it'll live with me forever. Just that beat, that was so cool. But yeah, and then I went off the rails. I went to graphic design school and there wasn't anyone else in the metal. Everyone was into hip hop. So Nelly was around then. I remember, I wasn't into Ja Rule really. But my mate made me this mix and it had Nelly songs, it had DMX, but it was like the craziest mix. It was called Kappa's Mad Mix. And at the student accommodation place I was at, the Kappa's Mad Mix was the CD that everyone loved. They put on Kappa's Mad Mix. It was wild. So, and there was, I was hanging out with a couple of guys that were into music production and I kind of put them onto rap and I kind of ruined them in a way. They were into Lou Reed and they had a very mature music taste. Sam and Nick was their names. And I remember I went to Sam's apartment once and he's like, he was fully into rap, listening to Wu-Tang and stuff, but he's like, man, have you heard this? I used to listen to this band, and they were good. I was like, oh, okay. And he put it on. He put on a Dead Guy by Ministry, like that bass line kicked in. Yeah. And keep sticking it in, keep sticking it in.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, this is really good. Like, really good. And then he played Lay Lay Be Lay, which was really good as well. And then I just went and bought the album a month or two later, and I just played it nonstop. And then songs would just start coming alive. Like now, probably Welcome to the Fold is probably my favorite song.
The Fall?
The Fall.
The Fall is my favorite song on the album. And I've written it down because of this exact part.
I know it's good.
That's it.
It's incredible, man. I think the other reason I like this is because it's so beautiful. And it's so awesome because it offends so many people when they hear this album. They're like, this is the most terrible thing I've ever heard. I bought it on vinyl and my partner's like, hey, how could you listen to this? This is the worst music I've ever heard. But only I can hear how beautiful
there is a layer
are,
of
and only you can hear.
Yeah, well, and once you dig past that, it's like, oh my God, there's beautiful songs with some beautiful synth parts. But at what point in your relationship did you sort of reveal that you were in fact a filth pig? You're like, this is what I actually really like.
No, it's pretty. I guess it's one of the main things that attracted me to my partner was she was into really good music. You know, obviously it's matured a lot, but yeah, she put me onto the Black Angels and stuff like that, which just, you know, that kind of nice ambient noise rock, I guess. Which is good, but yeah, no, I don't think anyone's ready for Ministry. I don't think anyone's ready for it. I think it's like, it's got to speak to you, and that's it, you know. And I kind of respect it, you know. I'm like, oh.
Even Al Jorgensen said, like, Filth Pig finally came out on January 30, 1996, and everyone hated it. They all wanted Psalm 70, and he said, I gave them an electronic-free record full of gun-in-mouth dirges of nothing but pain. Aside from the cover art, the humor was gone. All that was left was misery, and I still had to tour the fucking thing, which went down in history as an interminable, intolerable, absolute depraved sphincter. So, like, even the fans weren't super into it.
Yeah, man. No, I've never got into any of their other albums as much as this. Like, you know, Psalm 69, stuff like that, it was all right, but none of them spoke to me like this one. It's brutal, it's industrial. I think it just, people were into industrial metal, you know, like I was into Mark of Cain and stuff like that, a bit of stuff like that, but nothing was as hard and as brutal and as crazy as this, you know, nothing.
Have you read Al Jorgensen's book?
No. Is it good?
It is one of the fucking best books you'll ever read, and you should 100% buy it. So even he said, the real problem is that bands care too much about what their fans think. Sure, if it wasn't for their fans, artists wouldn't have the expensive cars and indulgent lifestyles, but bowing to the nebulous force that brought you the riches is a mistake. If I listened to my fans, I'd still be making nauseating synth pop with no guitars and no soul. So even he's like, look, I know the fans don't like it, but this is what I wanted to make at the time. Yes, he had a fucking $1,000 a day heroin habit at the time, but this album is fucking great. I'm really so happy you picked it.
Man, I think it's the start of also like of my musical, my music maturing, you know, going from, I mean, look, I love Static X. I love all that stuff. A lot of people bag new metal, but I wouldn't be where I am today without new metal. I think a heavy metal singer or someone said it the best. He was like, it's a great stepping stone into the real stuff. You know, I think it was just the best stepping stone, but this is when my musical ear turned into stuff that was, I went from like a terrible hip hop phase and wanting hooks and wanting earworms and wanting to more ambience, more beautiful stuff to, you know, like Mr. Bungle's California, which is probably my favorite album ever, nearly, you know, it all came from from that, from this album, really, where it all changed, where ambience is louder almost than hard driving.
Sitting in a groove for a long time, like Lava, just sits in this groove for a long time and it rules.
Man.
Like, you don't need verse, chorus, verse, chorus, middle eight.
When I was doing graphic design, my parents bought me one of those cool Macs with the different colored backing on it. And I made I remember for one of our graphic design projects, we had to make something, and I made a paintball thing on Darling Harbour. And I remember I made a short film, and it was just made up of slides of stuff. Like, I took photos of, when I went out to the farm, I took photos of greasy metal and rusted metal and cords hanging and oil dripping and cords and stuff. You see on machinery. And I scanned all those photos in. You couldn't go straight into the camera. I sat by a scanner and I scanned all day all these photos. And I remember I made up a slideshow with that, with Lava going on in the background. It's actually probably the coolest thing I've made.
And I graduated with distinctions.
Yeah. So it was really cool, man. It was really inspiring. The whole album. It was a soundtrack to everything.
Have you seen them live?
No, man. They were meant to tour. Was it 3 or 4 years ago or something like that? 4 or 5 years ago, they were going to tour. I think it was them and Filter, wasn't it? Something like that.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really regret never seeing them, but I've just never played in their vicinity. But then also sometimes I think, do I really want to see them in industry live? Will it be good?
Yeah. Well, in like 1992, they played Lollapalooza, and it was like them, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Ice Cube, Soundgarden, Jesus and Mary Chain, Pearl Jam, and Lush. And there's videos on YouTube, and if you go through the comments, people are like, this was the most intense mosh pit I've ever been in my goddamn life. Like, it was fucking wild. So it'd be good to be around that cast. But it's kind of like when I went and saw Morrissey like a couple of years ago, all these hardcore fans, but now they're like 55. And halfway through, they all just started doing back exercises and like sitting down because they, had sore lower backs. So I reckon even the hardcore Ministry fans, like, we've got two songs in this, guys. And then they need to do a Nick Cave-esque show at Hanging Rock. I reckon Ministry at Hanging Rock with all these like aging Ministry fans.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man. That'd be awesome. You would see some red hot old guys rocking the big long dreadlocks, I reckon. You'd definitely see a lot of computer tech people.
IT workers. Have you convinced anyone to get into Filth Pig? Have you sort of spread the gospel?
Never. I don't think so. People are either into ministry or they're not, and when you do meet, it's like when you meet another Ween fan, it's a kinship. I've got a good friend that I met, he's a Dum Dum fan, Sammy, and my Maggie's partner. We all love ministry, and it's like, it's so cool. We've got like a ministry kind of chat group where we all decided that KMFDM is the poor man's ministry.
Oh,
we share things. Like, I didn't know, I think like the start of Jesus Built My Hot Rod, I know it's not on this album, is like the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. I think I kick myself every day that I didn't come up with that somehow.
Well, that's a hot take on KMFDM, because there's a drummer, William Frederick Riflin, I think, and he plays on one of the songs on this album. He plays on Useless, I think, and he played drums on Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile, and Lure.
Oh, yeah.
He played keyboards with King Crimson, synth, bass, guitar with Swans. He played drums with Taylor Swift, REM, and a bunch of drum, bass programming synthesizers for KMFDM. So, like, there's a little bit of a crossover, but, yeah, I'd like... I wonder how many Ministry fans share that opinion. Is that a popular thing amongst the Filth Pigs?
Well, I gave MFDM a good go. I gave them a go. And then I was like, this is good. I'm not really getting into it. Like, they had the coolest artwork ever. And I was like, I got to get in on this artwork. I want one of these shirts or whatever. And then you're like, oh, no, it's not gripping me. And then, but it's not their fault. I think it's like, I don't think they set out to be the poor man's ministry. I just think, once again, you've got a mogul, like Al Jorgensen, and the guy speaks to you on a whole different level, you know.
But do you think if back in that fateful day when you're in the mud hole, or forgive me, I forget the name, someone puts on KMFDM instead of Ministry, does that change? Is it when? Is it what you heard first?
No. I think, I don't think I would have. I remember that it did have to pass a test. But then it was late comers. I remember there was big hype over Tomahawk when the first album came out. I remember reading a magazine of it, and I was like, this is going to be some crazy heavy stuff. And it wasn't what I, back then, I just wanted something heavy and crazy. So I listened to Tomahawk, the first album. I didn't really get into it. It was too bassy for me, I guess, too. Like, and then later on, after going full Mike Patton round two, I guess, I really, really got into it. You know, yeah. I was really, really fully into it, you know. I also should point out at this time, I got heavily into Slayer as well. God Hates Us All, Seasons in the Abyss. What was the album where they had the different drummer besides Tom Araya? I think
Was it Divine Intervention, Undisputed Attitude?
Yeah, I think it was Divine Intervention, yeah.
Some
yeah.
of that. But yeah, I've never been into Slayer. I could never get into it. And I listened to some relatively extreme stuff, but could never figure that out. Like, I'd go Cradle of Filth over Slayer anytime.
Yeah, Cradle of Filth, it was too devil-infused for me. Anything that went full devil, I wasn't really into it. I don't know why.
6 out of 10 devils I can do.
Yeah. I was a Christian for a while, so I think it kind of stuck in my head for a bit. You know, you just kind of, I guess, just wandering through life. I just finished studying and stuff, and yeah, had a few friends put on Mr. Bungle at a party, and I was like, oh, this sounds like something that a bit unique. And I went and saw I didn't see Mr. Bungle, but I went and I got that album that had a bunch of Ween and Mr. Bungle on it, and a bit of Primus, and that all kind of opened up a whole new thing for me.
If you start at Nirvana, you can probably go like down another road, like go Melvins, the Meat Puppets, Daniel Johnson, that sort of stuff. Or you can go down the road you went to. It's like, all right, what's heavier? What's a bit more raw? You know, what else can I really dig my fingers in? I think Ministry are a perfect band for that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And I think it's really cool to go from like probably my favorite track on Nevermind was Stay Away, you know, because I love the drumming, you know, it was crazy. And then I remember my mate, Pete, once again, he would get, hand-me-downs from his older brothers. And he got The Fragile by Nine Inch Nails. And I was in year 9, 10. I couldn't really get into it at the time, you know. Probably another big album that really turned things around that was probably the stopgap between Nevermind and Sepultura was Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and Infinity Sadness, which was really grew crazily, because when I was young, I thought this didn't need to be two albums. And then later on in life, I was like, no, this did need to be two albums. It's really good.
I still like Adore, and the hardcore Smashing Pumpkin fans absolutely hate me for it, but I don't mind that at all as well. Siamese Dream, awesome. Billy Corgan does have a podcast at the moment. He does talk about Shapeshifters, so it's pretty good. He's got some hot takes, some hot theories. But something this album does really, really well is all their synth work. They also have, on top of that, some great samples. And Crumbs has a really interesting sample, I think. I never had a life. I don't even know what life is. Now, it's pitched down and it's hidden in that mix there. But do you know what that sample is?
No.
It's Charles Manson.
Oh, really?
Life. I don't even know what life is, you know. I go to the desert. I'm not even allowed to live in your desert. I'm no
good. So for the record, are you for or against Charles Manson?
Yeah, probably against, okay. I'd say. Yeah, just over what he did. Yeah.
Yeah. Just crosses that line a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Beach Boys thing's nearly got me over, you know, but yeah.
So I wasn't sure if like you were liking Filth Pig because of the Manson connection or if that's just an added bonus, but it's actually a detriment.
That was one of the songs that Sam did play on that fateful day in Manly. Played that song, Crumb. There was that, Lay Lady Lay, and Dead Guy. It's just that was one of the songs that really got me in. I was like, oh wow, this is cool, you know.
Well, Lay Lady Lay, the Bob Dylan cover, yeah?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yes.
Here's the Bob Dylan version.
Lay across my big breast bed.
And so I know that song really, really well. And it wasn't till a few listens I'm like, wait, is this a fucking cover?
Yeah.
This is Ministry's version. And I was like, I love how they push the vocals right back in that, and they fuck with the song. And so I've actually designed a game for you, Kappa. Would you like to play it?
Yes.
So I've got five songs, and I've taken them and I've performed a cover of them, but I've put them through some big fucked synths, all right? So the melody is there, but it's hidden. And I want to know if you can guess the songs, okay? Are you ready?
Cool. Yeah, I'm in.
All right, here we go. First song.
Careless Whispers, George Michael.
Yeah. Hey, one for one, 100%.
That was great, man. That was a really good that was Al Jorgensen style.
Man, yeah. If I could get you to take some photos and scan them for me, I'll make a slideshow. Next one.
Easy. Right. You know, Faith No More, they covered the Commodores.
Yeah. Two for two. Yeah. Let's see if you get this next one.
I don't know. Oh, is it? Would it be Korn something?
Yeah, close.
Freak on a Leash.
Yeah!
You did it! I can play just a little bit for you. You'll hear it. You'll hear the melody. All right, next one. You might be getting 100% here.
Ah, yes. This is Tool. Not Lateralis. It's off the Lateralis album. The main song from Lateralis.
First single, Schism.
Schism,
that's I've it. Given it to you.
Yes.
All right, this is it, man. It's All or Nothing, all right? Last song. Let's see if you can do it.
Little Red Corvette by Prince. Yeah. Beautiful. That was great.
You've gone 5 for 5, man. Well done. Now, you are no stranger to karaoke, and I'm pretty sure you often sing Prince at karaoke. Am I right?
Yes, man. Cream. My number one.
That's your
number
jam.
One. Yeah.
So if you go to karaoke nights, like, I quite like them in Asia because it's private booths, but in Australia, a lot of the Western world, it's just like a public bar where anyone can get up. And I have a theory that when you're DJing events or whatever, people come up and give you requests unsolicited. They don't actually know what the party wants. You know, they're like, oh, do Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm like, you think you want that, but the intro is slow as shit and the outro is slow as shit. You don't want Bohemian. It's a party killer. You think it's fun. You want Don't Stop Me Now. Same with karaoke. People get up on stage and they're like, oh, this is a great song. It's like, yeah, but you only know the chorus.
Yeah.
And I know you guys at Phone Hex, your podcast has have a sponsor in what's the one that like shaves your balls?
Oh yeah, yeah. Manscaped.
Manscaped. Yeah, that's right. Does Flat Stick have one?
No, not yet. I think we've got unofficial ones. You know, we've got Bolter Brewing probably sponsored both of my podcasts. And they give away beers for us and stuff. And we love they give us beers and stuff. And they're good. And then we've got King Island Brewing, you know. They're cool. Kangaroo Island Brewing. I always get the wrong fucking island. Kangaroo Island Brewing. Yeah, that's the one near Adelaide. Yeah.
Well, man, we have sponsors all the time too, man. And they don't often want to come on board, so I offer them quite a lot of money to come on board. It's sort of reverse sponsorship. Yeah. And I've actually organized a sponsor today in your honor of it's tied in with the karaoke industry.
Oh no. Not tonight. Not now. I promised them I wouldn't, but I feel the urge growing within me. A voice inside me that won't stop screaming. Must get on stage at this karaoke bar and sing songs that I only know the chorus to. Must resist. Must resist.
Has this happened to you before? Have you promised your friends and partner that you would not get drunk and get up on stage and sing karaoke songs that you only know the chorus to? Well, you no longer need to feel alone because Derek Flannery has a new compilation called Derek Flannery Gets Huff, Pissed on 3 pints of beer and a vodka soda and sings karaoke songs that he only knows the chorus to. If you want to go and take a ride with me, there's a ba-ba-da, hey, yeah, hey, must be the money. If you want to go and get high with me, ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da-da, ya bum ba bum ba bum. Hey, yeah, yeah, hey, must be the money. Listen from the comfort of your home as Derek Flannery gets tipsy enough to take on REM's End of the World. Fuck. Nah, Slappo, put the phone down. I don't want it some fucking Instagram reels or whatever. All right, here we go. Overflow population. Right, it's the end of the world and you know it. And you might be thinking, Derek Flannery, you're a dumb fucking drunken idiot. But you're not drunk and dumb enough to take on Bare Naked Ladies 1 week, are you? Surely not.
Kind of guy laughs at a funeral, can't understand what I mean, well you soon will. I'm gonna wear my mind on my sleeve. I have a history of taking off my shirt. It's been 1 week since you looked at me, threw your arms in the air and said you're crazy. 5 days since you tackled me, I still got the my knees. It's been 3 days since the afternoon. You realize it's not my fault, not a given me to your sorry.
And listen along as Derek Flannery takes on the final big boss of karaoke songs. That's right, Savage Gardens. What's it called? Like, I need you, want you? You'll know when you hear it. It's the Chicka Cherry Cola song.
Anytime I need to see a face, I hurt my room on the mind.
Like a Chicka Cherry Cola.
I don't need to explain this, hold on tight.
And I need you, I want you. Come stand a little bit closer. That's right. Derek Flannery gets half maggot on 3 pints of beer and a vodka soda and sings karaoke songs from the top of his head without looking at the screen and not really knowing the verses and only the choruses. It's out now wherever you get your fucking awesome albums. So I know there's that rule in comedy, the rule of three. Yeah?
Yeah.
I actually believe in the rule of 4 to 5 and really staying in a joke, like having one premise and then just getting comfortable, you know, no twists, no turns, just staying straight ahead. The tram track
approach.
Join
the club, man. Yeah. I do it till I don't think it's funny and I just keep going until I think it's funny again, you know?
Peek behind the curtain. That was inspired by my friend Roxy, who said for about a year, her and her brother would just go around the house mumbling that verse to that Savage Garden song, and it drove their dad insane because they'd just be walking around like cleaning the dishes, I think this is advice for all parents, right? I don't have kids, but when you have them, it's like the first year is so beautiful and they're like, you know, crawling around and they're doe-eyed and they sleep and you get to like put a little sign on them that says 9 months old, 8 weeks old, whatever it is. You don't realize that in 11 to 12 years, they're going to be annoying the shit out of you singing Savage Garden songs, or they might become lizard kids where it's like, oh yeah, my kid's really into blue tongue lizards and he just goes down the creek and picks them up and he brings them home and he puts them in his bed. You don't know if you're going to have a lizard kid. You don't know if you're going to have a Savage Garden kid, you know, or you don't know if you're going to have a kid that's walking around with Adidas track pants singing along to Shoots and Ladders.
Yeah.
You know, parenthood.
Yeah. Terrible.
Cap, thank you so much for joining. We've got to do some plugs. Now, if people haven't heard your comedy stylings, I mean, it was in the intro. I do have a fantastic grab here.
Oh, yeah, you can whinge all you like, but I fucked your father. Yeah, he fucked your father too. A lot of blokes here. How many blokes have been in jail?
That's Nick Capra from The Catfish on Tuesday night. No, that was obviously Rodney Rood, but, you know, similar style to your style, am I right?
I wish it was my own. Damn it. Oh, man, no, that's great. Before we go, man, did you ever listen to any Revolting Cox? I would never listen to any of it.
Never, no. I'm only sort of just now getting a bit more into industrial stuff. As it was sort of a lockdown project where I'm like, everyone fucking knows, I feel like everyone knows how to play like MIDI or synthesizers or all that sort of stuff. I don't know how to do any of that. So I really just knuckled down and figured it out. And now that I've got my head around it, I can listen to more industrial or, program stuff and get around it a lot more. So I don't even know if Revolting Cox is that, but that's what I imagine it is.
I heard he got in trouble because he took live cattle on stage.
It's like one of those things, you just have to do it once, hey. You know, you just do it once and then that's your reputation forever, you know, and it just grows and grows. Yeah, so I think your comedy stylings, you have to bite the head off a bat just once or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, got to do some. Yeah. I'm getting older and I find my ideas, this is what I find really hard is I find my ideas get more and more normal as I get older, and it's very hard. It's a hard thing to fight and it's brutal, you know.
Sadly, I think as we get older, you become a better risk assessor, and you're like, risk versus reward. Who can be bothered? But when you're like early in your career, or early, you know, 20s, you're just like, it's all reward. There's no risk.
Yeah. Sam Campbell said to me once that I said something to him that stuck in his head, where he was like, I was like, my favorite bands, they all started out crazy. And then they just got softer and softer. They all started out metal or wild, and they got softer and softer. You know, you got to be careful. You got to always start out crazy and then filter from then on, you know, go whatever. And
it's as you get better at your art, but you also surround yourself with, like, in a band sense, you know, suddenly you get a better sound guy who's like, oh, we're playing festivals, open hi-hats don't work. You got to close those hi-hats, stick to 4/4 beats. This sound works better on a beat, but you also get better at your instrument. You know what I mean? You get better at songwriting structures. You get all that sort of stuff. And sadly, you lose a lot of that edge, I think. You become really round. And when you're around sound, you're hard to grab onto. You know what I mean? Like, Ministry's all edges and jagged, serrated parts.
Yeah.
You can cut yourself and you can grab onto them. But as bands often get a bit more polished, like, that's it, polished. You can't grab onto it nearly as much. That's my sort of Joe Rogan-esque hot take on music.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I find that was the coolest thing about System of a Down with Hypnotize and Mesmerize, was that they were wild, wild albums, you know, and really they should have got more polished and shit, man. If anything, they pushed it further and went crazier than ever, you know.
But then they imploded, you know, so it's like that, there's no longevity. They don't really want to be in the same room. One's a MAGA voter, one's the opposite, one's strung out, you know. And one's just like, can't we all just get along like Kirk?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, no. It's really cool talking music. If you ever want to talk about it again or whatever, let me know. I've got heaps of albums I could talk to in this length of time.
What are your go-tos like your all-timers? Like, I know you had a really cool Spotify Wrapped this year, or 2022. I know you're pretty stoked on that.
Now, my partner's got a really, she's got a little Volkswagen Golf. And I don't know, gone are the days where you put a Vorpunk system in or a Pioneer system. This V-dub system absolutely rules, and it really pumps, you know. So, yeah, that's when I started going back to Fear Factory and all that kind of stuff, and yeah, really loving it, you know. So that's all the stuff that sounds really good through a hard stereo is awesome, you know. So that's, I think that's why my Spotify Wrapped consisted of a lot of those things.
And I think, like, if you're doing like bike riding or exercising or whatever, sometimes you want music that you know really well, so you don't have to actively listen. You can just like, here's the good part, I'm going to rev hard here, or you're not actively trying to process what's going on.
Yeah. Also, like, I feel like I am scared that I won't be creative anymore, so I've got to fill my head with crazy noise. Like, it can't be any safe noise. It's got to be crazy noise that absolutely keeps me chaotic. I don't think it works, but that's what I'm trying to do. You know? Yeah.
Well, I think like Filth Pig is a good example of that, because it's like, it was a nightmare to record. They did it in their own studio for some unknown reason in Texas that they were building, and shit would just break all the time. So they'd try and fix it, and they'd have to wait for parts to be put back in and all that sort of stuff. But with that comes chaos and energy. It's like, did we capture it? Yeah, we got it. Can we do it again? No, I'm afraid not. That's it. Like, that's what's to tape is what we've got. Yeah. So there's that live element, I think, as well, that is so easily lost with like home recording getting a lot better and so on.
Man, I think so. And that's what I'm trying to work on at the moment, you know, doing this new show is like, oh yeah, it's all like, a lot of it's tight, but where can I put the risk in?
So do you find yourself going to music more for inspiration rather than like watching other comedians?
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah. I find now that it's like, I discuss this a lot with a lot of friends and stuff, on the latest, Flat City, on the episode with David Quirk. I think I've discussed on Phonex for 4 years. We were in the golden era where people were rejects, and then they would turn to art. They were rejects. They couldn't do anything else. They were nuts. And now the level of art is a lot higher, because people are hustling. People don't drink anymore. People are like, but people aren't screw ups anymore. They're just hustlers, hustling the art. They're grinding and all that kind of stuff. They're fit, and that's good, but they're not crazy. I think sometimes you need crazy.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think people have also like boiled down the algorithm, and they're like, all right, well, to be successful, I need sort of this, 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 and this. And I know a bunch of comedians are now like, all right, subtitled Instagram Reels and TikToks. You have to do it. Like, it's necessary to sort of get your voice out there and so on. So all of a sudden, rather than just getting on the stage, this is what I imagine, you're getting on stage just doing whatever. Now you're like, all right, filming it, is the lighting good? All right, did you record that?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, cool. All right, I'll chop that out, you know? Maybe potentially, do you think you're not in the moment as much?
For sure, man. Yeah, no, that's it. That's it. And I think that's what, you can write and rehearse jokes as much as you can, but you'll never get that magic. It's like, oh, it's, so now I try to make each show different. I try to there to be an element of risk somehow. I don't know how, but yeah.
With those Instagram Reels or those subtitled videos or whatever, what is the hope there? Is it the hope that people see it, it goes viral, and then they all go to your show? Because I can imagine the amount of people who go to your show, go to anyone's show, sorry, from seeing a video like that is negligible. But maybe TV execs see it, or radio producers, or like, what? Why do comedians have to do it?
I think it is advertising. For a while for me, it was advertising, you know, and I mean, on some mediums, it is advertising, like TikTok or whatever. Like, I don't care about TikTok. It's not art for me. You know, I don't know. I just want to get as many people to see me as possible on TikTok. Yeah. That's all that's invented for. Whereas, but then I found out when I tried to do that Instagram, I found out I wasn't making good stuff. I wasn't making stuff that I wanted to see. So now I just put up stuff that I probably want to see, you know, like, oh yeah, that's a decent joke. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, it's just to build a following, really.
But have you noticed like a difference in crowd numbers or people like following you on Instagram when you put those stuff up?
Yeah, you have one that goes off and heaps of people follow you, but I don't think it's entirely successful. I think like successful for some people. I think you've got a guy like that cool Tom Cardi guy who does those comedy songs. That's where all his following has come from putting his songs up on those Instagram and stuff, and that's worked for him. And now he has cult status, and that's it. So I think everyone's trying to kind of emulate people like that. You know, Luke Kidgel doing crowd work and filming the crowd work, and Stavros Hulkius, same thing with him. Yeah, they're all trying to emulate that. I think all those guys got their tickets and their money from those clips. Like, that's what they got.
Well, I'm glad you put up one of your jokes, because it's one of my favorite, not only pop culture references, but it's one of my favorite jokes of yours.
As you can tell, peeps, I'm a pretty horny guy. I'm horny as they come. Yeah, yeah. You heard that rumor about Prince and Marilyn Manson, how they got two of their ribs taken out so they could suck themselves off? I had to put two in to stop myself. Yeah.
That is totally my wheelhouse. And like when I went and saw Greg Larson's show the other year where he came out to Korn's Falling Away From Me, I was just like, these jokes feel like they're targeted straight to me. I was like, yes, I love that. So hopefully that one's gone viral on Instagram.
Yeah, that one's going nuts at the moment, actually. It is. It's really going nuts. Yeah, so yeah, you get stuff like that. You get a lot of followers, but it's kind of like also a back-ended thing as well, because most of them are in America, so they're never going to see you anyway.
Well, Pork Palace is on YouTube. What else have you got? Are you doing, like, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Cancer, that's going around. Is that at Melbourne International Comedy Festival this year?
Yeah, the Melbourne Comedy Festival. I just got offered Sydney Comedy Festival, so I'm going to do that. Brisbane Comedy Festival, it'll be in Newcastle at some point. And Perth, if you missed that, and Adelaide Fringe. So yeah, it's awesome. It's going to be great. It's, you know, I'm doing a big deal this time, but you know, I don't know if I'll tour much after this. I'll see how it go. But yeah, I'm just going as hard as I can, getting this show out, getting my ball cut out, due to cancer.
I've seen some of the stuff you're doing, and I don't know how you make such a heavy topic really funny and even relatable. Like, yeah, you've smashed it. So I think my theory is you're like, oh, I don't know if I'll do much touring, and this show takes off, and then you're like, all right, well, I'm doing this for the next like 20 years. Thought I was out, and then they dragged me back in.
It's always the way, but hopefully it won't be the way this time, and I get a real job and I can lead a normal life.
I'll have all the links in the show notes and stuff, but is there anything else you want to plug? Any podcasts or anything in general?
Flatstick and Phone Hacks podcast as well. Flatstick, if you're into dirt bikes, you know, metal, all that kind of stuff, beers, where you guys, Brett Blake and I, mountain biking as well. And then, yeah, Phone Hacks is probably the worst podcast ever. Do not listen to it. It's disgusting. We go through each other's phones. It's the worst. But I love it. And with Mike Goldstein, the best. And I've got those two things. And my YouTube channel. I'm putting heaps of stuff on YouTube. Speaking of putting clips up from comedians, I'm doing a new thing where I'm putting clips up where it's me bombing, where I'm not going good at shows. Real Al Jorgensen stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to start putting that up on YouTube soon. And I ride my motorbike to the gig and I bomb and I ride back, you know. So, Nick Capper on YouTube. Check that out.
Awesome. And you pop up occasionally on Jack Drews' YouTube channel as well.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. His latest special is crazy. It's so good.
Yeah. Rap Paradise, yeah?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Before you go, one last question. It's your chance to burn all the comedians you know. I think I know some of the comedians and their musical tastes. I've got a theory that about 80% of, let's just say Melbourne comedians anyway, dog shit music tastes. Agree or disagree?
Man, this is hard for me to comment on, I guess, because I got heavily into Ween and Mr. Bungle, and I thought I was alone besides my brother and maybe two other mates. But then I got into comedy and I just met up with a whole crew. So you got like Carl Chandler, he's really into all the Mike Patton stuff. You also got Jack, he's into the Mountain Goats. Brett Blake, he's hugely into Pantera. Mike Goldstein's got a bit of dog shit taste. He's into like some dumb punk, you know what I mean? Like the
No Effects, MXPX shit. Me First and the Gimme Gimmies.
Yeah, never got into that stuff. Little weasel stuff. most of the other comics, probably dog shit taste, I'd say.
I reckon I'm right. 85%.
Dave O'Neill's got really good taste. He's into some good stuff.
Yeah, if they played the Sunbury Music Festival, O'Neill loves them.
I tell you, you got to get on here, Matt Stewart.
Yeah, because he's a massive TISM fan, Cosmic Psychos.
He was a big new metal fan as well.
Oh, really?
He had a big pink goatee and he's got a flame tattoo on his ankle. Yeah, huge new metal fan.
Oh, my God. He hides it well. I do like people who sort of hide it well, like in society.
Yeah.
I think it's like a hidden virus, you know. It's like an STI that it lays dormant for years and then comes out. It's like, wait, is that something on your lip?
It does, man.
Is that a LeBret piercing? Does. Nick Kappa, thank you so much for joining me, man. I really, really appreciate it. And make sure you go see Nick Kappa at whatever he's doing. You know, just pop into his house. Just check out what he's up to 24/7.
Yeah, check it out. Send me a message anytime about music. A lot of people do. They either send me messages about tractors, music, or dirt bikes.
You operate in a very weird Venn diagram. Tractors.
It is weird.
And Fear Factory.
I wish more people send me messages about art, because I love talking about art as well. But, you know, until you start an art podcast, I'm out.
Nah, I don't have time for that. I'll do it with Lars from Metallica. All right, man. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, mate. Bye.